sales win rates have plummeted to a mere 17%, and outdated technology and tedious manual processes are to blame. Meanwhile, managers lack the visibility they need to hold their teams accountable. But imagine a world in which these crippling issues are solved automatically. Revenue.io automates the most frustrating parts of sales so reps can focus on what they do best, selling. Completely automate pre-call research, logging conversation data in your CRM, writing post-conversation recap emails, and prioritized outreach. And as reps book more meetings and close more deals, managers gain the real-time insight they need to scale what's working across their entire team. Ready to say goodbye to tedious sales processes and watch your win rate soar? Head over to revenue.io to learn more.
You might get that information in your current state, right? If you're in a sales management position, you might get some level of, here's the outcomes of our calls, here's what that looks like, coming from your sales ops team specifically. But it's not going to be based on anything besides, here's how our sales calls are going, because it's in that sales silo. And the RevOps thing is really about extending it beyond that. So like, hey, new manager who's managing my inbound SDRs, here's how our calls are going by lead source. By the way, like, let's break this out. If they're converting on this infographic, nobody's ever converting to an opportunity. If they're converting from this other infographic or this event that we had, everybody's taking a meeting.
Hi, friends. Welcome to the Sales Enablement Podcast. I'm your host, Andy Paul. Now, that was Jordan Henderson. And Jordan is one of the co-hosts of the RevOps Podcast. And he joins me today, along with his co-hosts, Brandon Redlinger and Jonathan Stevens, to talk about, well, we're going to talk about revenue operations. So among the topics we cover in our conversation today are, what exactly is revenue operations? I mean, certainly it's a term that everybody's hearing more and more frequently, but really, what is revenue operations? And what is the goal of revenue operations within the organization? We'll talk about how revenue operation fits into an overall organization. And also we'll get into how traditional sales, marketing, and success roles fit into an revenue operations environment. We'll also dive into how sales teams in general, and individual contributors in particular, benefit from the efforts of revenue operations. So we'll get into all of this and much, much more. But before we get to Jordan, Brandon, and Jonathan, I want to remind you to subscribe to this podcast wherever you listen to it. And if you subscribe, we'd certainly appreciate if you could leave us a review, give us your feedback about how we're doing. We'd really appreciate that. So thank you. All right, let's jump into it.
All right, Brandon, Jordan, Jonathan, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having us, Andy.
Yeah, excited to be here.
Excited to be here. Well, that's exciting to hear.
I mean, it's my second time, so I'm pretty excited to revisit.
Yeah, well, you can see how we've changed the place since then. So. So everybody's doing well. That's great. We're going to talk about revenue operations today because you three are the co-hosts of an exciting new podcast called, well, you tell us what it's called.
Yeah, it's called the RevOps Podcast, very fittingly, which funny enough, was not
our imaginative name. We like it.
It was not our first name. Our first name was much, much worse. It was called the RevOps Stars Podcast. And
the RevOps what?
RevOps Stars, yeah.
RevOps Stars. Oh, self-anointed. I like that.
It was, yeah. It was really bad, is what it was. It was self-anointed, being terrible at naming things, is where we went. So we quickly segued away from that to the RevOps Podcast. But yeah, we are super excited about it. We're I think, 7 or 8 episodes in now and having a lot of fun making it, to be honest.
Well, you guys are on the cusp because, at least as of a few years ago, the statistic was the average number of episodes that a podcaster produced before they stopped producing podcasts was 7.
7, that's right. Oh, we made it, guys. We made it.
We're well beyond that in the rearview mirror.
All right, you guys are good.
That's an interesting stat.
Yeah, well, when you think about it, I mean, there's...
Yeah.
What, every other person in the United States has a podcast now, so it's bound to be some drop-off.
Podcasts are the new blogs.
Podcasts are the new blogs. Exactly.
That's a good way to put it. As far as I know, I think we're probably the only one or one of a couple of podcasts focused really strictly on RevOps, which has given us a pretty unique audience. We're definitely the only podcast where it's a RevOps person interviewing two marketers about RevOps.
Because that's true.
That's a very unique take on the subject matter.
Well, but you're not interviewing your co-hosts.
No, conversational. We also interviewed some awesome guests. We just recently had John Miller from Demand Base on and have a couple of great guests lined up and are doing some drop-ins like this. So
perfect. All right. Yeah. So let's just start at the beginning. Sure, lots of people that hear the term RevOps. So somebody give me a good definition of RevOps.
Do either of the non-RevOps guys want to give it a crack? I ask them for a definition on every episode, and neither one of them ever impresses me. So I'll very, very concisely put it. RevOps is aligning your entire go-to-market functionality. So basically, at its core, aligning marketing, sales, and customer success to the buyer's journey to make sure you have a great buying experience and increase your revenue as a business.
The way that I think of it, is like aligning people, processes, and data around the buying journey so that you can, like Jordan said, deliver a streamlined buying experience for the customer.
Well, so what specifically, what aspects of the buying experience are the buyer saying, help me with, that revenue operations addresses?
Yeah, that's a great sort of question and example, right? So the biggest thing it does is it aligns it to when your buyer says, hey, help me with this. So a buyer comes in through marketing material, says, hey, help me solve XYZ problem to your marketing team. It's making sure the sales team knows, hey, he said this is the problem you want him to solve. Like, this is the messaging that worked to help him know that we can solve this. This is how we're going to help him solve it. So sales already is using the same messaging, the same cadence, the same approach that marketing was using to convert that lead. And then when that person ultimately becomes a customer, your CS team is identified like, hey, this is the problem. Hey, here's what we said we're going to do. Here's how we're going to help them. And actually aligning to that buyer's pain from literally the moment they convert on a marketing material to 2 years into their life cycle as a customer.
Okay, so let me address that from the perspective of an individual contributor who's saying, okay, great description. You seem to have sort of glommed over sort of a critical part of the whole thing, which was the actual sales part of it. When the salesperson's engaged. I look at productivity from a selling perspective, not in terms of activities, but in terms of actually creating more outcomes, right? More revenue generated per hour of selling time. And so when we look at the hurdles to that from a sales perspective, it's the mundane but essential things. It's qualification, it's discovery, it's selling value, it's all shown through, unfortunately in SaaS, really low win rates, unacceptably low win rates, as a product of all those things above. So how is revenue ops going to help the individual contributor do better at those things that I laid out?
Yeah, I would think of it like, every seller's worked with sales ops before, right? Like, you have a sales ops person whose job it is on the back end is to essentially help make your job easier. They make using Salesforce easier. They make going through your process easier. Well, theoretically, they should, right? I know that. I know there's going to be sellers who listen to this and go, sales ops makes my life terrible. But theoretically, they should be helping you, increase selling time, maximize your selling time, maximize your ROI for that time. RevOps is essentially doing that in the same way, I think, by, think of it like an extra resource. So they're giving, I'm not telling you, hey, this is the only problem they have to solve, but I'm giving you extra resources from marketing. You have more information, more data. That way, when you go into doing the things that are in your sales process, like qualifying, discovery, going through all those, it's not we're cutting those out of the equation. We're streamlining it to make sure you're going into those more well-prepared and that data is at your fingertips, that aligns to the actual buyers. So you can have better discovery calls, better qualifying calls. You're going to identify more pain, deeper pain, which is going to allow you to sell more value. Because the more pain you identify, the more value you can sell, right?
Yeah, I mean, don't get me started on the whole pain thing, because I don't use those words, but you said, okay, the data that will help you do a better job discovery and so on throughout your process. So what is that data? So what is going to help? What are we going to enable a seller with an AE what data we're going to enable them with through RevOps that will help them do a better job of discovery. Let's just use that as an example.
Yeah, it could be lots of things. So I mean, like the easy ones are the messaging. Here's the messaging we use that they converted on. Here's where they came from. Here's the questions you should ask this person. Here's some sample discovery questions for this person based on where they converted. So they converted on this infographic that said, these are 10 ways that sales reps are wasting time. That means that this person is concerned about how sellers are wasting time. So here's 5 sample discovery questions that we would use that are actually drafted with marketing and sales to help you dig in on that specific problem. And here's what that and what that infographic said, right? So rather than just like kicking that over and saying, hey, sales, here's a lead, good luck, throw it over the fence. We're actually giving you guidance and aligning that to make sure that you're asking the right questions. And then the second piece of that is then measuring the success of those discovery questions, that sample messaging, and feeding that back up to your marketing team to make sure marketing is changing what they're using, what messaging they're recommending, and how they're bringing in leads, because they can start to better inform the audience before it even gets to you to make your conversations continuously better, right? So it's sort of that whole feedback loop, not just downstream, but also upstream.
And so how are you measuring whether those questions were effective or not?
So call outcomes, talk time on calls, objection handling ratings. I mean, we use obviously our own product conversation AI very extensively at RingDNA to do a lot of this really cool stuff. I mean, you can go in and listen to 100 phone calls and see what objections we got for specific lead sources and roll that data back up. We use Yoda to do the discovery questions, examples like, hey, this person's mentioned this, they converted on this lead source, here's an example question you should ask them, pops up right on the screen, super valuable. They can rate afterwards.
Slow down. So for people who aren't aware of what Yoda is, explain what Yoda is.
Yeah, Yoda is a real-time coaching tool. That is the easiest way to put it.
Yes.
From RingDNA. And I'm not a seller, so I will not
clearly
be the best person.
I think we just grasped that in the last minute or so.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
But Yoda allows you to put real-time notifications and real-time guidance and coaching on the screen of your seller while they're on a call, whether that's a Zoom call or a phone call. And so it's picking up like, hey, this person came in through this lead source, or this person has mentioned this specific thing. Here's 2 example questions that you should ask them, or here's 2 example ways to handle that objection in order to help us proceed this call forward. So it's a way to honestly scale coaching across your team. And we use it as part of our revenue operations, very importantly, to give that real-time discovery guidance and call coaching to AEs and SDRs that's actually, you know, based on the question, not only the questions being asked, but the lead source of the person they're talking to, the actions that person has taken, that sort of thing.
Yeah, I think it's important for people to understand that this is happening in real time. It's not
real time. You
know, yeah, real time. Exactly. It's not somebody listening to the call and doing that. It's the system itself is making those suggestions. Go ahead.
Yeah, I was just going to say, you know, and where RevOps also really comes in handy here is like just making sure that all of that data is attached to that contact or that account or that opportunity so that you can trigger these notifications based on any of that data, right? So, you know, we work closely with sales to say, all right, if it's this title, ask this question, or if they're in this stage, ask this other question. Or you could even be listening for things that are not said. You did not ask this question 2 minutes into the conversation and 2 minutes into the, you know, initial call. Let's remind the rep to ask that. And it can be different based on the person they're actually talking to. So, you know, a lot of the unsexy work is actually the work that the RevOps team does behind the scenes to make the sales process more efficient for both the buyer and the seller.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, I think that, as I see is potential, I don't know, I say problem, but I mean, it's one thing we see is we have, you know, reps get too reliant on these questions or suggested, and they suspend their curiosity, which is the curiosity in the moment that really leads to the true understanding. So it's like, well, how do we ensure that reps don't become so reliant? Because we see a large number of sellers that have become, you know, we've all heard the stories about, you know, robotic sales reps. Mm-hmm. So how do we make sure we're not, you know, creating more robotic sales reps? How do we, you know, use this data to help really stimulate their curiosity?
I think like a lot of this, sure, it can make sure that you're asking certain questions, but it also coaches you on other behavioral stuff. So if you are dominating the conversation, if we had Yoda or CAI conversation AI, which is another product on this podcast, it might be like, Jordan, stop talking. Let your fellow co-host talk. Right. I'm just kidding.
I would never get that recommendation.
Yeah, that's not for me, at least.
I suspect I hear that often on your show. Yes. Yeah.
I think it's actually really important to note, Andy, to your question. Yoda isn't replacing sales enablement. I think sales enablement continues to be important. It's an augment to your sales enablement process. And the way you avoid, I think it's very important to be careful to avoid creating robotic sales reps. And I would do that in a way, I don't want every single question to come out of Yoda. I don't want Yoda to be popping up questions every six seconds on the screen for the rep to ask, right? I don't want that level of controlled guidance. Basically, I want some recommendations. Here's some guiding questions. And then I want to train my reps external to that in my sales enablement process, whatever my training, process looks like, to do the things like layered questions and really, pique that curiosity and dig into the things they're saying. But maybe that first question is queued up by Yoda, but then the layered questions that come after, I want the rep to sort of feel those organically so they can dig into the specific things that the person is experiencing.
Yeah, I think it's important that the rep's personality kind of rings in and they show their personality. They're not just reading off of, a suggestion line, that they'll just use it as a guideline more than an actual thing that they're just reading off of the script.
Yeah, well, I think I was just trying to highlight, this is not, specific to RevOps or, Yoda or anything like that. It's a sort of a trend we see, right? Is when we provide people... if we don't sort of encourage the curiosity at the same time we provide them lots of information and lots of suggestions on what to do, is they sometimes default to the playbook instead of the curiosity, which is what, if you take the curiosity out of the equation, then we might as well have the machine ask the questions and right. Take the salesperson out of it altogether.
But it's just going to be a terrible sales process or sales experience too, right? Like if I could just send you the questions in an email then at that point, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, this is again, not unusual. Marketing does a great job creating marketing operations somewhere, creating personas, and we got questions for personas. And then we've got sellers that think they're selling to personas and not to people. And mm-hmm. they sort of forget that. And I think that's one of our biggest challenges, because if we look at the high rate of no decisions that take place through a pipeline, I was just reading another study yesterday, or the results of a study actually 2 days ago, saying 50% of deals in B2B pipeline average end up no decision. It's like, that's a problem, right?
Yeah.
So So where's the failure there? And the failure, it gets back to discovery, qualification. It's really a lack of understanding, ultimately a lack of understanding of what are the most important things to the buyer they're trying to accomplish. Challenges they're trying to solve and, outcomes they're trying to achieve. And that requires that, people be in the moment, as Jonathan said, that we use these as guidelines, as frameworks, but that we don't take that as the end all be all, the suggestions.
Yeah. I think that's a super important note, is it's a resource and an aid, but don't go overboard on it, right? Like it can't be the end all be all. It has to be a resource.
Yeah, it's not a step-by-step instruction. It's suggestions about how to do it better.
You don't get an Allen wrench with it and the ability to put together that piece of IKEA furniture, right? Like it helps, but it might be the Allen wrench. It helps out, but...
Yeah, that's a great example. I have to think about that for a second.
The unfortunate part of sales, too, is you could do everything right, sell it perfectly, and on the other side of the line... they just don't have their stuff together and can't make the decision. And that's a frustrating part of sales. It's like they want the tool, but they can't sell it upright or whatever the case may be.
I mean, and that certainly happens. I mean, I would say from my experiences, that's a pretty small percentage of it, right? I think when buyers are ready to invest the time and attention and effort required to make a decision, that I think, Yeah, ultimately they're as frustrated as the sellers when they don't make a decision. But the reason they don't is, I think more often than not, is not because they couldn't reach a consensus on the buying committee and push it upward. It's like there's just nothing compelling presented to them to say, yeah, let's change from what we're doing.
Yeah.
At this time. So I'm ultimately, I think in most cases, it's a failure of selling, not a failure of the buyer to buy. Though, believe me, I've blamed the buyer many times.
I'm pretty sure every seller has blamed the buyer.
A story in one of my books about this. I was sitting on a train and I was going to take a train from New York City to Boston. And right before the train doors close, some young guy in a suit hops on the train and gets on his phone. And he's sitting in the row in front of me so I can hear him. And he's clearly talking to a sales manager. And I just remember one of the most memorable lines I've ever heard out of a salesperson. He says, "Yeah, but the buyers were just liars." I'm thinking, oh, the whole world, summed up in one sentence, because clearly the boss was saying, you had said we were going to close that deal this month because it was the last day of the month.
That was committed for sure.
Yeah, it was committed. Yeah, the buyers were just liars. I was like, yeah, buddy.
Just keep telling yourself that.
Yeah. I felt like tapping him on the shoulder and saying, I've got a copy in my book here, but I just couldn't bring myself.
I wish I knew that what his manager was saying on the other end of that line.
I'm sure he was telling him chapter and verse about how you promised. you swore this was going to happen. We went through this account. What happened? There's a rule. Not digressing too much. There's rules. Yeah, as a manager, you should really watch out for is when you're doing pipeline reviews and you're talking about specific opportunities, the odds of the deal happening are in inverse proportion to the amount of defensiveness displayed by the rep when talking about it. So, just FYI.
Now, how do we measure that defensiveness?
you get a sense, right?
You can always tell. You can always tell a little bit.
No, believe me, this one's really going to happen, boss. Trust me, it's really going to happen. It's like, no, that's not going to happen at all. Okay. Yeah. Next. All right. So let's take the questions about how RevOps helps. Let's move it up a level to the frontline manager. We've got a problem almost of crisis proportions in sales in terms of, we've got this strata of frontline managers that we promote into these positions. We don't train them. We don't enable them. We don't give them the knowledge they need to be able to coach people appropriately and develop their sellers. We got high churn rates among sales sellers. So how's RevOps going to help them?
It's a great question. It's a very large question, I think it still comes back to enablement, right? I would sort of continue on in the example we were talking about.
So
one of the things that it would do, right, if I'm using something like Yoda to help my reps be better at discovery or qualifying, whatever that is, I'm also measuring the results of that. And I'm finding out, here's the discovery questions that are working. Here's the qualifying questions that are working. Here's the talk tracks that are actually landing well with our deals. Like, the call outcomes are good if we're using these questions. They're bad if we're using this question. By the way, it's super important to identify what's not working, right? And it's helping me as in RevOps. I can then go in and say, here's what messaging is working for these different types of calls. Here's what messaging is working for prospecting cold calls and calling, infographics. And I can put all that information into the hands of a manager, especially a new manager, and suddenly they've got some guidance on what sort of messaging is working, what their ICP is, who they should be reaching out to, how they should be coaching their reps specifically, right? Like, these are the things you should be doing or shouldn't be doing. They can listen in on calls and actually day-to-day manage reps that way and enables them to essentially, step into that role without just drowning right away. It gives them some resources, something to cling on to.
And to that point, also, like, some of our top reps will even just on their own share some of their most successful calls. And I think that's really a nice thing to have is the recordings of their successful calls to be able to show kind of the greener reps how to do things.
Yeah, it definitely helps, right? Like, let's celebrate with each other. Here's some great calls. Here's some deals that closed and here's how those calls went. And we can share that out to the team to help new reps and help people stay longer, that sort of thing.
Yeah. So, but just sort of close the circle on the question is, the things you talk about, a lot of people are going to listen to this and say, well, Yeah, I get that anyway. I don't need RevOps. So where's RevOps come? And this is because I want to come back and say, okay, let's look at where RevOps fits in the organization and you know, what's under it, who's at work with, and so on. But maybe just start with that question, then we'll circle back up to where it fits.
I'd like to know who gets that data right now that doesn't have RevOps, to be honest. I don't think there's a lot of people that get that level of granularity in how their calls are going and their new managers are picking up that level of data.
But they have the tool, right? I mean, if somebody has a conversational intelligence tool, what's the step they're missing to be able to extract that data?
Data layer would be the most, and Jonathan can probably talk more about that because he asked me to talk about data layers every single week. but we can talk about data integrity, but for what it's worth, a hugely important piece of RevOps is aligning your data layer into one system, which allows you to communicate these things cross-departmentally and upstream from marketing to sales and et cetera. And I'll let Jonathan speak to that in a moment. The other piece of it is... you might get that information in your current state, right? If you're in a sales management position, you might get some level of, you know, here's the outcomes of our calls. Here's what that mm-hmm. looks like coming from your sales ops team specifically, but it's not going to be based on anything besides, you know, here's how our sales calls are going because it's in that sales silo. And the RevOps thing mm-hmm. is really about extending it beyond that. So like, hey, new manager who's managing my inbound SDRs, here's how our calls are going by lead source. By the mm-hmm. way, right? Like, let's break this out. If they're converting on this infographic, nobody's ever converting to an opportunity. If they're converting from this other infographic or this event that we had, everybody's mm-hmm. taking a meeting. So great. So let's coach you into, you know, prioritizing these leads specifically. It's aligning back to the marketing side to help them be better managers.
All right. Fair enough. So, Jonathan, he said he was going to let you talk. So, go ahead.
Yeah, you want to talk about data? Jonathan, yes. Tell us about data.
Grab the opportunity with Jonathan up for a second.
Yeah, so I think another big piece of that is just enabling the data to be in a place where it's actionable and you can actually analyze this data. So, providing data at the fingertips of the rep so that they can see what's working, what's not working in real time and take action mm-hmm. immediately is one of the most critical points.
Okay.
So centralizing data, making sure your data is all in one spot. It's easy to access, easy to analyze. I think that's one of the most critical facets of revenue operations.
All right. So Jordan, where's this fit in the organization?
I think of revenue operations, my preferred. There's a lot of debate about this, by the way. People are like, should it report to the CMO or CSO or CRO or COO or whatever it is.
Some people think that the head of revenue operations should be the CRO. Yes.
Also true, mm-hmm. right? So yeah. This is, I don't care is my honest answer. I don't honestly think it matters if you report into the CSO or the CMO. I think the most important thing is that you have an executive mandate. So you have your CEO and your exec team is bought into the concept that somebody's job is to align these teams and they have a lot of autonomy to go do that. I think that's very important. And I think that the role is essentially layered on top of sales ops and marketing ops. It's not replacing those things. Those things still need to exist because those teams need dedicated resources. And this is not going to be a dedicated resource. But one of the biggest parts of RevOps is aligning sales ops and marketing operations, right? And CS operations for what it's worth. So I'm less concerned with the top.
Explain what you mean by the alignment between those marketing ops, sales ops, and CS ops.
Yeah. So everybody probably has sales ops. Marketing ops has really seen a rise in the past couple of years, but marketing ops, Jonathan, you could talk about what you do a little bit. But essentially when we're talking about sales ops, putting together our data and aligning everything for the sales team and making sure they have the right tools and technology and frameworks for their and processes for their frameworks. At the same time, Jonathan, who's our marketing ops guy, is doing that on the marketing side. He's making sure our email campaigns are going out to the right audiences and that everybody's triggering into certain things. And he's pulling in data from different sources to augment our marketing database, which is actually also our sales database because we have a shared data layer. Mm-hmm. All of those two things are very, very important. But if Jonathan and Matt are aligned, it means Jonathan could be, for example, emailing everybody in our database for one campaign while sellers are also double targeting at the same time, right? Which could mm-hmm. cause damage because they could get a sales email and a marketing email within a minute of each other, which makes us look like we have no idea what we're doing. So a very easy example of we need those two things super aligned to make sure our targeting across the entire business is in order.
Okay.
And really maximizing our spend, especially on our paid side, on the marketing side, is ensuring that sales and marketing alignment. And I think RevOps is in the best position to help ensure that.
So this is a dotted line between marketing ops and sales ops into RevOps.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay.
In a lot of ways, I think it aligns that maximizing spend, ensuring that our outreach is very coordinated across the board, ensuring speed to lead conversion rates, because I think marketing to SDRs is a super important touch point between those two teams, and that should be, you know, very much in the wheelhouse of revenue operations. Upstream feedback loops would be very, very important as a part of this. So sales ops and marketing ops, it's really easy for people to conceptualize sending data downstream to sales, right? Marketing, hey, here's this lead, throw it over the fence, and sales takes it and runs with it. And here's some information about that lead as you go. But sending feedback back from sales to marketing is very important, something that doesn't happen, I think, in a lot of businesses. And so making sure that sales ops is doing things to pull data and results from sales and feeding that up to marketing in a way that's very useful for them and deciding who to target and what messaging to use and those sorts of things is also a huge piece of that. And that's definitely something that RevOps does, help coordinate between sales ops and marketing ops.
Okay, well, let's give Brandon a chance to talk here. So Brandon, why does product marketing care about RevOps?
I think that's a great question. And before we did the podcast, honestly, I was like, this is going to be interesting. We don't really do the same things. But at the end of the day, like if you think about it, we actually do very similar things. We just do it in very different ways. Like a lot of the things that we're talking about is enabling sellers to sell better, right? Like he's doing a lot of things on the back end, whereas my team comes in with the content and the messaging, the positioning. And then I get that feedback from his team saying, this is what's working, this is what's not. Or if or if we're doing something like territory planning or anything like new pricing or reevaluating our pricing. Now, we just recently talked in an episode about that. And there's actually a lot of data that I get from his team that actually helps me inform how I make these decisions and vice versa too. There's a lot of information that I have in the market because, you know, that really is what product marketing is. You know, that's one of their main jobs is having their ear on the market. I can go back to him and say, as you're doing the territory planning, here are some things that might be changing in specific markets, in specific segments, and that will help him inform how he actually, you know, splits up the territory or things like that, which reps he assigns there, that sort of thing. So yeah, in the beginning, I really actually had that same question. But at the end of the day, it's like, there's actually a lot more that we could be doing together that we should be doing together. And honestly, doing the podcast has actually helped me align with the RevOps team overall.
All right.
You know, that was the actual intention of the podcast, by the way, because it was just to get Brandon to understand that I have a valuable job at the business. That was it.
He actually does do work. Okay.
Perfectly understandable. So, so I guess one of the last areas one to ask is, because this is a new function. So like Jordan, you've been on the show in the past, you talked about how you got into it, but for people who are listening to this, because I get messages all the time, people think, well, you know, I want to move from sales into enablement, or I want to move from, you know, sales into sales ops or something like that. So who, you know, would the seller look at RevOps as a potential career path?
Yeah, absolutely. Our sales ops person was an AE before, as well as an SDR, and is ultimately probably going to pursue a RevOps path. And I think he'll be a great fit for it in the future. I think as long as you have some exposure to sales or marketing, RevOps is like a logical path for you if you're interested in the ops space and you're tech savvy and you're interested in like the data layer and that sort of stuff. I think you have to come from.
What do you need to learn? What do you need to bring to the table in order to be considered?
There's definitely a layer of, you know, like Salesforce admin skills and HubSpot admin skills and just overall technical aptitude. I think, Jonathan, how many how many different softwares do we log into and use on a daily basis that you have to just pick up and run on? Like a dozen?
So many. Wait, yeah.
So there's a piece of that where like you're really going to have to pick up a lot of technical, you know how and be able to really open a software and sort of figure it out on your own. Beyond that, I mean, there's a lot of business analyst type work, really understanding what metrics are important, what sort of data you need to track to do that sort of stuff. There's a huge component of the role that is that. But I think fundamentally, as long as you are from the marketing universe or the sales universe, you at least understand what's important to one of those two teams, which is very core. And then as you grow into the role, whether it's marketing ops and then stepping into RevOps or sales ops and then stepping into RevOps, you can learn what's important to the other team. Right. Okay. I've never been a marketer, but I talk to Jonathan and Brandon and William and our entire marketing team 3 hours every day. So I can at least sort of wrap my head around what's important to them as marketers and know what I need to do to help them be successful, right? So the things I would lean into, I think marketing or sales people should absolutely, if they're interested in it, pursue that role. Things I would lean into are technical aptitude, really learn Salesforce, HubSpot, Pardot, that sort of stuff. Business analytics, what metrics are important, what metrics aren't important, what do you need to do to track those things, and how do you put together that data layer? Super important. And then learning the other side, what's important to them. So if you come from marketing, learn sales. If you come from sales, learn marketing, because you need to know those three things. If you do all that, you could do RevOps. You could do my job.
But it raises an interesting point, though. It's one thing that's really not seen as much as it used to be. It's from a career path, as people say, I'll go spend a couple years in sales, go spend a couple years in marketing, go spend a couple years in ops. I mean, we don't rotate people the way that it used to be very common in companies to give people exposure to all these different disciplines. But it seems like that's something we should be looking at.
Yeah, I think that would be great. I haven't met anybody in a long time who's jump from like 4 years of sales over to 4 years of marketing, right? Although I think Brandon, actually, you did that. You were in sales.
Totally. I started out in, I was my first real job out of college. Yeah, I was an SDR. Then I carried a bag for a few years and then made the move over to marketing.
Carried a bag. I actually carried a bag.
Okay, you're right. I did physically, no. You're right.
I'm
not that old.
Yeah. Wait, easy on the age group.
Oh, sorry.
Some of us really did carry a bag.
No, but
I had samples in it, but yeah. I had a briefcase. Thank you very much.
Briefcase, there you go.
Hey, we all had briefcases at that time.
There you go. No, but I think that's a really good point. I feel like in the past, the corporate world in the 80s, that's how they would groom future leaders, right? You would go spend, a few years here, a few years there. I think that's a huge missing piece because, I'll give you an example. When I got married, my wife and I did, one of those choreographed dances, right? And
can we we're going to circle back to that?
No.
Yeah, let's keep going. Can we find a link on YouTube for that?
Nope.
Are you sure?
Maybe.
You talk. I'm gonna do a little searching. Go ahead.
I was an absolute terrible leader, right? My wife was like, I don't know when you want me to, go into this step. And I'm like, I'm trying to show you here. And it wasn't until the instructor was like, okay, Brandon, I'm going to be the leader. You be the follower. You're going to be Megan's. You're going to do Megan's part, my wife's part. And then I could actually feel what he is doing to make me go into that step, right? So once I actually learned what the other side is looking for, I was then able to actually do that. So as soon as I took that perspective, I was actually able to be a pretty good dance leader. And that's how I've approached, going into product marketing. Let me actually go read a ton of product books. What does product actually do? How does product actually operate? And then how can it be a good counterpart to that? So, that's also the approach I took to sales and marketing.
And I'm still stuck on the fact that you learned empathy from a dance instructor. But yeah.
There you go.
It's a pretty awesome story. I like it.
I just like that Brandon has kept a tradition, despite this not being the RevOps podcast, in mentioning that he reads a lot. About seven consecutive episodes that he's dropped that nugget of wisdom.
I do know how to read.
Very good. And what are you reading?
I'm reading a few. I just read a book on pricing, Confessions of the Pricing Man, by Herman Simon, which is like, you know, the founder of Simon Kucher, which is kind of the leading price consultancy out there. Super fascinating book. Highly recommend that one. Just read Noise by Daniel Kahneman. Everyone knows Fast Thinking, Fast and Slow. This is his next book. I don't know, maybe a quarter way into it. And then I actually, based on one of your recommendations, Andy, Business Storytelling. Recently, maybe a few months ago on your podcast.
Yeah. Lee and Janine, Lee Lazarus and Janine Kernoff. Yes. Yes. Great book.
That is a great book. Love the visuals. Yeah,
the visuals are fantastic. Yeah, yes.
Great book.
All right. Jordan, Jonathan, you guys read it all?
I do read. I just don't have to. I don't feel obliged to tell people about it every episode. but right now I'm actually reading Algebra of Happiness by Scott Galloway, which is more of a personal book. But I love Scott Galloway.
Scott Galloway. Yeah, totally.
Yeah. Adjunct professor of marketing at NYU Stern. Hugely. His newsletter, his books, everything. It's all awesome. I definitely recommend it.
I listen to Pivot at least one of the episodes a week of Pivot with Kara Swisher. It's a great
That's a good podcast. Yeah.
He's got a great perspective about the dangers of big tech.
He really does. The big four are in his nightmares constantly, I think.
mine too, as a matter of fact. So, Jonathan, how about you? What are you reading?
I actually never learned to read, so
it's too bad.
I don't really read a whole lot. I do a lot of digging around on videos and articles and things like that, but I don't do a whole lot of books. I maybe should, but one of these days.
Yeah. They should write a book. That'd be a good way to get you reading.
Oh, there you go.
With all this free time I have.
skip right past reading straight into writing a book.
Yeah. Well, you got to research it, you know, do a little reading. It's a good way to do it. So
that's a good idea.
All right, guys. Thanks for joining me. So your show comes out how often?
Weekly on Wednesdays, I believe. Wednesdays?
That is correct.
Everybody's nodding their head. Yes, that's correct. It is on Wednesdays. Weekly on Wednesdays. We do guests, sometimes just us talking different topics. We love if people message us questions on LinkedIn. We usually address those in the episode. So if people want to, you know, send us any messages, thoughts, questions, topics, we'd love to hear them.
Perfect. All right, guys. Thanks for joining me.
Been a pleasure. Thanks, Andy.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks for having us.
Okay, that's it for this episode. First of all, I want to thank you for taking the time to listen. As always, I'm so grateful for your support of the show. And I want to thank my guests, Jordan Henderson, Brandon Redlinger, and Jonathan Stevens for sharing their insights with us today. If you enjoyed this episode, please subscribe to this podcast, Sales Enablement with Andy Paul, on iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. You can do all that on your phone in less than a minute as soon as this episode is over. So thank you for your help. And as always, thank you so much for investing your time with me today. Until next time, I'm your host, Andy Paul. Good selling, everyone.
Hey, sales strategists. At Revenue.io, we're not just imagining the future of sales. We're building it. We offer the world's most complete platform for revenue teams, and we're featured in the most recent Forrester Waves for both sales engagement and conversation intelligence. With Revenue.io, you can slash call prep time to seconds, guide your reps in real time to have more successful conversations, and after calls, we generate ready-to-send recap emails so sellers can keep deals soaring toward the finish line at light speed. See the future of sales now at Revenue.io.